speak tonight for the dignity of man and the destiny of democracy.
May the turbulence of our age yield to the true time of peace, when men and nations shall share a life that honors the dignity of each, the brotherhood of all.
I see a world of open borders, open trade, and most importantly, open mind.
Hello and welcome to the Republic, a show dedicated to history, civics, and U.S. institutions. I am your host, Jake Jokum, and I'm going to be going it alone this episode, in this installment. Both Matt and Jeff were unable to do this month with me. I had a topic in my head that I've really been formulating, and I've wanted to do this, and it's kind of perfect that I get to do this alone, because in a lot of ways, this topic is very near and dear to my heart, mostly because it is about political ideology. And this is something that has been, in my life, a ever-evolving process, is political identity and political socialization and what all that means. I'm excited. I'm really happy to be able to take this time and sit down and talk to the audience who's been with us. Gosh, I think this show's been going for almost 2 years now, when Jeff and I started with KXRW back in the summer of 2018, right after we both graduated. And we had started a podcast together, and Susan, who is the CEO of KXRW, met with both of us during the summer, and we were so fortunate to get the opportunity to create our own show and have this platform and share with you guys our love for history and civics and just all of the stuff that makes up our political thought, and help just try to unite our community. And being able to do this in the area that we call home, and it's just so wonderful. And so I'm so thankful to have that opportunity. But in relation to this particular topic, and I'm going to introduce it here in a second, it's something that, like I said, it's near and dear to my heart. And I love talking about philosophy and political ideology and getting into the definitions of what these terms mean, because they get thrown around so much in our everyday discourse. And it seems with how much polarization there is, the terms liberal and terms conservative and Republican and Democrat, they get thrown around so much that we lose sight of what those definitions mean. They become diluted. And then all of a sudden we're fighting over terms and definitions, and I think we stop realizing that in a lot of ways we're more alike than we are different. And I'm going to use this episode to really define what the term conservative is. My purpose of this episode, I'm hoping, is that at the end of it, the audience and even myself will be able to have a more nuanced discourse with somebody who we at the moment think is completely on the opposite side. We have nothing in common. There's nothing that we can agree upon. And then, but after hearing this, realizing that if, over time and space and of human history, of human society, that the terms conservative and liberal are fundamentally, at the base level, co-occurring processes. And they're co-occurring ideology. They're not, conservatism is not an ideology. We'll get into that. But there are we have so much more in common than we do differences. So as I just feel like I keep reiterating that, but it is so important for us as we go forward into this, what seeming like ever tumultuous time, that we find common ground with those who we think we vehemently disagree with. And there is room for debate, but I think having a historical and philosophical background of what the terms liberal and conservative mean, I think will really help us all going forward. So for me, this is why I'm excited about this particular topic, is because this is very much my own journey. And in a lot of ways, the information I'm going to be laying out throughout this episode is something that is quintessential to my progression as a member of society, as my progression as a thinker, as an academic, I kind of wanted to recap what this show is, what we started it, what Jeff and I had originally envisioned this show to be. And if you're just now tuning in, if this is one of your first episodes you're listening to the Republic, when this show started, we wanted to make a show about civics and in history to create, to help with understanding and bring about unity amongst our community. Like we noticed that Vancouver and Clark County specifically has a very wide ranging demographics, and especially as those demographics relate to political ideology. Clark County is a, according to Ballotpedia, is a +4 Republican district, which means the Washington 3rd Legislative District, where Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler is our representative, is a +4 Republican legislative district. And what that means is that it is 4 points higher than the national average, leaning towards the conservative, leaning towards Republicans, Republican voters. So, but it's in a very blue state. And even within the Washington 3rd, you've got Vancouver, which is generally more, skews more Democrat, but you've got counties going all the way out to White Salmon and then in Klickitat all the way to the coast. And to think about the broad range of people living in this area, we've got a massive amount of differences in the way people think and rural versus urban dichotomy. And I think that having this show on this platform specifically can do so much good, because I think that the listenership is so broad here. And I'm hoping that, and we hope that when we were formulating the show, is that we could help bring this community together. As you've probably, if you've been a longtime listener, you've probably noticed that we've talked considerably about domestic issues. We our first episode was on immigration. We've talked about U.S. voting. We've talked about the branches of the U.S. government in depth. We've done like our most recent episode, we've broke down different U.S. presidents' response to varying crises that had happened during their presidency, kind of trying to do a subtle juxtaposition between the past administration's response to the coronavirus pandemic and how past presidents have handled different crises. And there's been terrible responses and there has been great responses by presidents. And we just wanted to kind of give you our listeners a mixed bag. And that's just kind of something we want to bring to, something that Jeff and I, when we came up with this show, is we wanted to be as unbiased as possible, with the understanding that all of us have our own personal biases. And I know for me, I grew up Republican. I grew up in a conservative household. I still am. I mean, Washington doesn't have party registration, but I've always affiliated with the Republican Party. And I voted, my voting ballot was mixed between Republicans and Democrats in 2020. So I have my own personal biases. Jeff has his own personal biases. And that's going to come into play when anytime you're formulating an episode, you're going to have bias of omission. You're going to have different types of biases that ultimately are going to determine what kind of information you even present. You know, that in itself is a bias, what you choose to put in and what you choose to leave out. And we try to be as conscious about our bias as possible and challenge each other. That's one thing that I love about having Jeff as a co-host, is that he and I have challenged each other significantly. We do this every single week. Him and I do a podcast together, and then we do this show once a month, and we constantly are challenging each other. And it's a great friendship to have. And same with Matt. And Matt and Jeff and I, we met each other in college, and all three of us have our foundations in the discipline of history. And some of my fondest memories are sitting around and having spirited debates about the role of government and current events. And I hope that in a way we wanted to recreate that atmosphere on radio. And I think it does work pretty well, because I think you've got three people who from different backgrounds, all respecting each other's opinions, coming to the table with the marketplace of ideas is kind of something that Jeff and I talk about a lot, is a place where people are free to say what they mean, free to put their opinions out there, their ideas out there, and then receive feedback on those ideas. But you have to be open. But the thing with that is, and I think one thing we've lost as a society is the ability to take critique back on our opinions. If I put out an opinion that isn't popular and I get critique back, that's not an attack on me. That's just an attack on my idea. And at that point, I can choose to reframe, rethink, go do more research, broaden my opinions, and then come back to that marketplace of ideas. And I think that is one thing that above all else, education, the education system, and what I have found with my time in it, has allows such a natural cultivation of that marketplace of ideas. And that is something that principle and environment is something that I hope has been replicated on each installment of To the Republic. And going forward, I know that's something I'm going to try to reinvest in going forward. And I think that the best way to do that is to be honest and open with our audience. And for me, that's just talking about my background, because I think I can't talk about conservatism in the United States and just conservatism more broadly in human society and politics without talking about my own story and my own progress in thinking. And so, but before I start on that journey, I just wanted to quickly talk about KXRW. And like I mentioned, how grateful I am to have this platform, but I did want to say that KXRW.fm is where you can find all the backlogs of our shows if you're interested in listening to other great content. Some of my favorites are The Common Good with Joe Clemens, Filibusters with John Oberg, and all the other shows that are on there. There's great a collection of music shows, the Gordon Green's Music Planet, The Mud Club with Ivan, The Vibe with Ryan Reed. There's something for everybody there, and you can find that at kxrw.fm. Also there, I really encourage you to donate. It keeps us on the air. Like I said, this radio station and this community brings so much to the greater community of Clark County and Vancouver, and it's really worth keeping around. So if you can donate at all, it would be much appreciated. I know everybody in the KXRW family would appreciate it. So you can do that at kxrw.fm. There is a donate link there. So with that, before we get into the next break, I just wanted to really quickly give you my personal background. So I'm 30 years old. I recently turned 30. I've lived in Vancouver my whole life. I graduated from Hudson's Bay High School. I went to Clark College, and then I transferred to Washington State University, where I received my bachelor's in history. I have done some graduate work at American University in international relations. I'm putting my graduate work on hold right now as I figure things out. COVID, as it has done with everybody's life, has uprooted everything. But my education is one of the biggest foundational pieces of my life. And I entered higher education originally out of high school. I wasn't ready to be in school. And I had a lot of preconceived beliefs about politics in general. And to understand the time frame, this was 2009, 2010. And this was right after the election of President Obama, and coming from a very conservative household, coming from a very Republican background, that was not an election that sat well with me. I was a big supporter of John McCain, and I was also just very young and full of energy, we'll put it in a nice way, and woefully inarticulate, but I had strong opinions. And over time, I began to resist against what I thought was liberal indoctrination at the collegiate level, because that's what the news that I was I was watching and consuming, and closing myself off to competing ideas, not listening to that marketplace of ideas. I really struggled. And honestly, I wasn't in the physical and mental space to be in school, as well as I had a lot of personal growth to be able to go through until I was capable in a collegiate setting. So I took a few years off. I went and worked full time. And then I realized that it's time for me to go back to school. If I want to be where I want to be, which has always been in education, I wanted to be a teacher ever since I was little. History has been such a big part of my life. I can remember as a young kid always loving to go to Fort Vancouver and pick the brains of the blacksmiths and the guys dressing up in the fur trade shop and talking to them all about the history of Fort Vancouver. And I went back to Clark, and I took as many classes in as many different disciplines as possible. I took classes in economics, I took classes in communications and history and geography, political science. I took as many classes in different disciplines as I could, and I transferred to Washington State, where I chose to major in history, and I received a social studies endorsement. My minor is in political science, and these different disciplines really helped me grow and become a more well-rounded person. But the biggest thing is that they helped me challenge and then reaffirm different beliefs and throw away beliefs that I had that were wrong. And I think I would still consider myself a Republican, and I still think as a disposition, I am conservative. And we'll get into more of what that means, but we'll get into more of what I mean by conservatism as a disposition rather than an ideology on the other side of the break. That is kind of, in a way, a short, abridged version of my journey. And so I want to thank you guys for listening. So going forward in this episode, I'm going to lay out the philosophical underpinnings of liberalism and then by extension, conservatism. And then we'll get into what conservatism means in the U.S. context. You have been listening to The Republic on KXRW. I'm your host, Jake, and we'll be right back.
Big thank you to Kraft Cannabis, formerly known as New Vansterdam, for their ongoing support of KXRW Vancouver Radio. Kraft Cannabis is Vancouver's premier cannabis market for those 21 years of age and over. Visit craftcannabis.com to view an order from their full online menu, and they offer in-store, curbside, and touchless pickup to better serve you. Kraft Cannabis is located in the Heights Shopping Center on the corner of Mill Plain and Andreessen Road. Open 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., 365 days a year. More information available at craftcannabis.com.
Big thank you to our friends at Boomerang Therapy Works and home of the KXRW Studios. Boomerang is the only physical therapy facility in Vancouver and Portland that specializes in the treatment of neuromuscular disorders and brain injuries like Parkinson's, MS, and stroke. They opened Boomerang to bring premier treatment to their patients. Find Boomerang Therapy Works in action on Instagram or Facebook and see how their patients are inspired in their recovery. They can be reached at 360-258-1637. That's 360-258-1637.
Welcome back to The Republic. I'm Jake, and in this episode, I'm going to lay out the definitions of liberalism and then more importantly, what it means to be conservative in the philosophical and historical contexts of human society. On its surface, it sounds like a very big project, and it is, and it's something that I don't think can fully, truly be covered in an hour, but this is the time constraints in which I live in. So in our last segment, I talked a bit about, I re-outlined the show, talked a bit about my own personal history with politics and my growth in political thought. Through as I've journeyed through life, both in school and out of school, and then talked a bit about the radio station and the role that I hope that this show and the radio station plays in our broader community here in Clark County and Vancouver. So in this segment, I'm going to talk about political philosophy, and I'm going to talk about why conservatism is a disposition rather than its own political philosophy, and why that is important to us in society, especially as it relates to American politics. Because I don't think, normally we think as liberalism and conservatism as being competing political ideologies. And I think we get that because we associate these particular political terms with the political parties that dominate our political system. So we assume liberals are Democrats and conservatives are Republicans. But I think that it's not an appropriate dichotomy to say liberalism and conservatism are different. I don't think they're necessarily competing. I think in a lot of ways they help reinforce each other and help check each other in a very important way. And I think that the existence of both if we're going to have parties in a political system like the United States is a presidential system where two parties dominate the system, it's important to have an ebb and flow to progressivism and conservatism, and it's good to have parties that are checking each other. And the health of a democracy needs a rational opposition party, and I think that one of the biggest drivers of our current divisiveness in this country as it relates to politics is this belief that liberals and conservatives are fundamentally different. And I'm going to use this segment to kind of challenge that notion. The origins of, well, so the difference between philosophy and I think a disposition like conservatism is that a philosophy has a particular set of written principles that are understood, and it helps people who are reading about that philosophy or hear to that philosophy understand the world around them. And that's in liberalism. Liberalism generally is a political philosophy, and that's because liberals believe that in John Locke's social contract, which would be the powers derived from the consent of the governed. Liberals believe that government is necessary. The existence of a government is necessary for a free and functioning society. And it very much draws off of Thomas Hobbes's view of social order and escape from anarchy. Now, liberals would push back against Hobbes's absolutist view of power, but they take from Hobbes the notion that without the existence of governance, humans will devolve into anarchy. And to use Hobbes's description of anarchy, life in anarchy is brutish and short. So, understanding that government is necessary to a free and understanding that government is a necessary entity to make sure that people are living a relatively safe and free, the creation of a free and open society. With the understanding on top of that, people vesting power into the government that then has some control over their lives is derived from the consent of those people. That is fundamental liberal philosophy in politics. Conservatives and liberals both would take those principles, and that's how they go about governing or formulating the basics of their political thought. They're at the fundamental level, conservatives and liberals are the same. There really isn't a fundamental difference between those two. The difference is that in a lot of ways, conservatism just looks to different mechanisms to slow down what they see as unstable behavior. And for that, conservatives more or less rely on tradition and norms to fill in the blanks where government either they believe shouldn't be involved in or can't be involved in an equitable or an efficient manner. And so I think this quote I found from the philosopher Michael Oakeshott puts it best. I think he says, "To be conservative is to prefer the familiar to the unknown, to prefer the tried to the untried, fact to mystery, the actual to the possible, the limited to the unbounded, the near to the distant." Like classical liberalism, conservatism, it is a child of the Enlightenment. A lot of the thinkers that underpin today's kind of conservative thinking were liberal thinkers during the Enlightenment period. It's just their ideas, as we've become more divisive and looking to separate conservatism from liberalism, we start to pick apart and I think incorrectly associate different philosophers with either conservative thought or liberal thought. And I think that's fundamentally wrong, getting back to those fundamental principles of liberalism, because I would say that Edmund Burke, who is consistently championed as the father of conservative thought in Western society, would push back against this notion that he was a conservative. I think he very much saw himself as a liberal, but because of his ideas about his writings and his ideas about the French Revolution not being actually progressive, but being actually retrograde, is what has earned him that idea as being a conservative. But I think that's a misappropriation of his beliefs. And I'll get into Edmund Burke here in a little bit. But I also wanted to point out another quote I found from Quentin Hogg, who is a British parliamentarian from the Conservative Party. And he said, "Conservatism is not so much a philosophy, but an attitude, a constant force performing a timeless function in the development of a free society in corresponding to a deep and permanent requirement of human nature itself." I think what both Oakeshott and Hogg are saying here is that conservatism is a necessary component to a liberal democracy, and that is a democracy that that drives its consent from the governed and is representative of the people as a whole and answers to the people, versus the juxtaposition to that, liberal democracy being in opposition to something of an authoritative nature, whether that be a monarchy or a one-party dictatorship like you see in China and Russia. So I think fundamentally to liberalism, there is a component of conservatism where you hold up norms and you hold up traditions, and those help you understand and help formulate a free society, and I think create a really natural check on progressives. And really the kind of the difference here, you know, whereas liberals would say social order emerges spontaneously from individuals acting freely, conservatives would push back and say that social order comes first, creating the conditions for freedom. But I do think that in a lot of ways, they do reinforce each other. The Economist, which wrote a great piece called The Global Crisis in Conservatism, argues that they actually bring out the best in each other. To quote the article, conservatism tempers liberal zeal, liberals puncture conservative complacency. And I think that is perfectly put, because as you look at U.S. politics today, there tends to be the conservatives in the Senate never want to move on anything, it seems like, whereas liberals in the Senate, progressives, I should say, to use the correct terminology, want to create rapid change. And when situations arrive that they want to move on them quickly, whereas conservatives will push back and say, hey, we need to make sure we examine everything. And I think that both are necessary to a functioning government. And I think both help us in maintaining a free and functioning society. So I think something that will help really kind of illustrate this, because I feel like this has gotten kind of convoluted, I want to play a quick clip from the Queen Mary University of London titled Empire and Revolution, The Political Life of Edmund Burke by Professor Richard Bork. I will reframe this as when we come back, but for now, enjoy the video.
Edmund Burke was one of the leading philosopher statesmen of the 18th century. He was born in Dublin in 1730 and he died in Buckinghamshire in 1797. For 30 years, he was an active and eloquent member of the British House of Commons, really during a period of turmoil and transformation domestically and globally. Interestingly, the legacy of Burke is a confusing one, because he was seen as a leading light of liberalism really down until the 1880s, and since then he was appropriated as a sort of stalwart conservative philosopher. Both of these appropriations, if you like, seem to me to be simplifications. I think his real legacy, at least ought to be, on the one hand, the way in which he contributed to the historical philosophical method in approaching politics generally, but also I think he provides sharp analysis for thinking about major elements of our own political world, like, for instance, parliamentarism, constitutionalism, the idea of party altogether, obviously revolution, but also ideas like national allegiance. Burke made two major contributions. First of all, as an Enlightenment figure himself, but also in dialogue with other thinkers of the period, like Montesquieu and Rousseau and David Hume and Adam Smith. But second of all, he was, of course, as a parliamentarian, a contributor to debate about the major developments of the period. So, for instance, the American Revolution, equally the French Revolution, of course, domestic developments in Britain, constitutional change in Ireland, and significantly, of course, also the British conquest of India. Well, I think for previous writers on Burke, first of all, it's been difficult to integrate him as a thinker on the one hand and as a parliamentarian on the other. So I think what's different about my book is an attempt to combine political history with intellectual history, and therefore bringing the major strands of his career into one analysis.
So I think it's important what this video points out is that it's hard to put any particular person into one camp. And I think that that points to that earlier point I made at the beginning of the segment, that it's an inappropriate dichotomy to create conservatism versus liberalism, but instead re-looking at, they reinforce each other. And a lot about conservatism being a disposition, it's kind of just a way of being. Doesn't have a fundamental set of principles that transcend time and space like liberalism does. Broadly, conservatism is just a extension of liberalism. And I think that is really shown by Edmund Burke and how Edmund Burke is seen, because I think the perfect way to really look at conservatism is that conservatism being a disposition is about what are the traditions like in society in the here and now. And I think as society progresses, whether it's slowly or quickly, what is conservative is constantly changing. What is seen as conservative is constantly changing, because traditions and values and norms are constantly changing and being reinforced. And as different cultures come together and mix and form new styles of government, different ideas about what is conservatives they're going to change. And so therefore, really, conservatism is just fundamentally a disposition. It's not its own set of, doesn't have its own set of principles. It's just its own way of thinking about society in the here and now. And so I kind of wanted to get more into Edmund Burke and who he was as a person. So Edmund Burke gets his conservative label from his opposition to the French Revolution. And because in how history is taught, we see the French Revolution as being a march towards progress, overthrowing the absolutist monarchy and replacing it with a democratic style government that we see in France today. But that was a long process. But originally, the revolutionaries in France wanted to model their government similar to that of the British Crown, which was a constitutional monarchy, that there was a parliament, and then there was the king, and both coexisted and shared power. In France, the French revolutionaries wanted that. The king denied them that. So as they began to revolution began to form and take hold, Edmund Burke became increasingly opposed to that. And I think a lot of people would put Burke into the camp of Hobbes, saying that Thomas Hobbes wrote about 150 years before Burke, was a staunch believer in the monarch, in the absolute power of the monarchy, and opposed the English Civil War that ultimately that resulted in the sharing of power between king and parliament, and opposed the French Revolution for different reasons, not because he saw the absolute monarchy falling as a threat to the stability of society, but because he saw the French Revolution by itself as not as a progressive movement, but a retrograde action that moved society backwards in progress. As he wrote about the French Revolution, he said it didn't meet the fundamentals of a progressive political system. It didn't have institutional checks and balances, and it didn't protect property rights. Those were his two biggest complaints, amongst others. For him, the revolution tore down institutions without replacing them with anything stable. For him, authority is derived from two different places. Authority by popular consent, as we see with the social contract under Locke, which is a liberal ideal, and then authority by tradition, which is in a lot of ways seen as conservative, but not tradition in all circumstances. He fundamentally believed that tradition was a way to protect rights, but rights are important. So tradition of family, the tradition of the tradition of politics and doing certain ways, even though it's not written in the Constitution that they're supposed to do this way. We do these things because that's how they've always been done, or we do these things because it's, quote, the right thing to do for the greater good. Those kind of traditions, tradition of religion and those kind of social institutions are very, very important to the continuation and of a free and safe society for all. Burke would uphold tradition as long as tradition wasn't trampling on rights. So I think that in a lot of ways, I think that really kind of underpins my own ideas of conservatism. I'm a conservative, but when people's rights are being threatened, people's rights aren't being actualized, like with which is why I personally support the Black Lives Matter movement, because I think there are rights that aren't being actualized, and tradition is in the way of some of our traditions are in the way of equal rights for all. So for me, I think you can be a conservative and still be progressive and still be quote a liberal in today's context. So I think it's important when you're thinking about conservatism and liberalism is thinking about how conservatism has evolved over time, and then tying that back to the early writings of the Enlightenment philosophers like Edmund Burke and John Locke and Thomas Hobbes, to really give yourself a full understanding of what these definitions are. And when you're engaging in a conversation with somebody across the table, someone who is, quote, across the aisle from you, is to try to have that understanding and understanding where they're coming from when they're talking about tradition, or they're talking about the role of government, is that all of these have a philosophical underpinning, and understanding that there are differences in looking at the same ideas or looking at the same principles but coming to different conclusions. So with that, I think we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to begin my talk on conservatism in the modern era, in the world that we currently live in, and why I don't associate the current right, the current Republican Party, with traditional conservatism ideas. You've been listening to The Republic. I'm Jake. We'll be right back.
Many thanks to our sponsor and friends at Say Chow Columbia River Tap Room and Eatery. Chef Peter has been cooking for over 27 years in the Vancouver area. Say Chow, Greater Vancouver's premier catering company. Conveniently located at 2501 Southeast Columbia Way in Vancouver. Dine in or take out for lunch Monday through Friday, 11 to 2 p.m. Hours will change and live local music will return once again as COVID phases allow. More information available at say-chow.com. That's say-chiao.com, or directly at 360-210-5522. KXRW would like to thank our friends at Farrar's Bistro for their ongoing support of community radio. Farrar's Bistro has a family-friendly vibe and comfort food with a flair. Farrar's Bistro has attracted both Vancouver locals and out-of-towners since their doors first opened in 2007. Dine-in, take-out, or delivery is offered. More information available at farrarsbistro.com. That's FarrarsBistro.com.
Welcome back to The Republic. I am Jake, and in our last segment, I talked about the differences between liberalism and conservatism, but then defined them as being reinforcing of each other and drawing from the same philosophical underpinnings to show that there isn't a dichotomy between conservatism and liberalism, and rather we should view liberalism as the core philosophy and conservatism as a disposition. In this segment, I'm going to talk about conservatism in the modern sense and try to draw a clear distinction between philosophical conservatism as a disposition rather than what the current right, both in the United States and in Europe, claim is conservative thought, but really is just authoritarianism wrapped in populism. Now, it seems like pretty harsh language, but I do truly believe that conservatism, more than anything, is under threat. Talking about the health, the longevity and health of a democracy, especially, needs a rational opposition party. And unfortunately, we are not getting that with the current iteration of the Republican Party, a party that I have for my entire voting life been affiliated with. And, you know, I would probably be labeled as a never Trumper these days. And I think that if that's how people want to label me, then that's fine. But I don't consider the ex-president in any way a true Republican in any nature of the word, and definitely not a conservative. So with that, I'm going to get into why I think that the right is currently eroding conservatism in the in current Western democracies. In both the United States and Britain, up until the election of Joe Biden, we're both under the controls of minority parties that have a conservative leaning, the Republican Party and the Conservative Party. The Republican Party in the United States, the Conservative Party or the Tories in Britain. But they're in power mostly by jettisoning the values that used to define it. In countries with parties to the center-right, they're being eroded. In Germany and Spain, they're being eviscerated in France and Italy. In countries who are more fledgling democracies that are just now starting in this newer wave of democratic regimes after the fall of the Soviet Union, like Hungary, the right has gone straight to populism without even trying conservatism. And what that means is, to define populism, is a political approach that strives to appeal to ordinary people who feel that their concerns are disregarded by established elite groups. Now, that's the dictionary definition of populism. And on face value, it sounds great, right? A government whose drives its power from the consent of the governed should be listening to the ordinary people or the masses. But ultimately, what populism ends up manifesting as is in calls to build the wall, to lock her up, and using extra constitutional, and especially in Western democracies, as they start to move towards authoritarianism, usually you see populist rhetoric being used to justify extra constitutional means to achieve those goals. So if, like, reappropriating funds to pay for the border wall when Congress is the branch that's supposed to appropriate funds, that is very populist policies and populist rhetoric in a nutshell. Now, both sides use populism to their advantage, but the right in the United States has used populism far more and far more dangerously than the Democratic Party has done recently. If you listen to my podcast, I have been very critical of different members of the Democratic Party on their use of populism, but it pales in comparison to President Trump's use of populism. Anyway, you know, traditional conservatives, as I laid out in the last segment, use authority of family, church, tradition, and local associations, non-established government institutions, to control change and slow it. And for them, if for a traditional conservative, you sweep away institutions at your power. But these institutions are more so being eroded by the new right. The new right isn't an evolution of conservatism. It's a repudiation of it, in my opinion. I would consider the right smashing of traditions as a sign that they're abandoning their conservative principles. They're zealous, they're ideological, and they're cavalier with the truth. Think about the raid, the overthrowing of our U.S. Capitol on January 6th. I mean, they overthrew the seat of our power, the very institution that upholds the American government. That is, you know, that's the seat of American power, and it was overthrown by people acting out of their own self-interests. If anything, that sounds like the antithesis of what Edmund Burke was talking about back in the 1780s when he wrote his foundational Enlightenment pieces. I there is no philosophical underpinnings that would make what they were asking for either liberal or conservative in nature. So with that, I mean, and this is not just to the United States. Australia suffers with this as well. There's, you know, they're suffering massive droughts, reef bleaching, all the causes of climate change. But yet the Conservative Party in their House of Representatives won re-election, and the head of that party addressed Parliament holding up a lump of coal like it was a relic. So it's really conservatism being defined in today's standards has really come. Today's right really focuses more on grievances and creating culture wars than they are about upholding institutions. And I think that is, for me, the scariest part of all of this. But also it's this attachment to cult of personalities, which conservatism, especially as Edmund Burke wrote, would push against revolutionaries and push against these cults of personalities, because that's what he believed was underpinning the French Revolution. And this is what we're seeing today, but we're seeing it under the guise of terms like conservative. And I think that we need to try to relabel what conservatism is. And I am very nervous for the future of rational conservatism and for democracy as a whole. And no more is that seen than trying to... the right's new attempt to try to change what it means to belong. In Hungary and Poland, especially, the right exalts this blood and soil nationalism, which excludes and discriminates. Vox, which is a political movement in Spain, harks back and uses language that upholds the Reconquista, which is when Christians kicked out Muslims from the country off of the Iberian Peninsula. This angry and reactionary nationalism kindles suspicion and hatred and division. And to me, none of that is conservative. It's the antithesis of it. Belonging to a nation and to a church and local communities are meant to unite people and motivate them to act in the common good, as all of the philosophers that I use to formulate my opinions about governance. I don't see this in any way as being conservative, and I'm very, very, very nervous about the way that the Republican Party is going. Mostly because it's a party that used to uphold the ideals of free trade and capitalism with minimal government intervention. But I still believe in John Maynard Keynes's demand side economic theory. I think it overthrowing Say's law, which was the governing economic philosophy up until the Great Depression. I think you can't look at economics and can't look at science and disagree with certain findings, right? And that doesn't make me not a conservative, because I believe that that government does have a role in the economy. I think that just makes me a pragmatist. And for me, it's conservatism. What made me a Republican was belief in foundational principles. And there's no policies being put forward by the Republicans, especially not at the most recent CPAC conference. It was just grievances. There was nothing saying, here's our policies that we want to see enacted, and here's the philosophy behind those policies that we think are good for the common good, and they're good for the nation as a whole moving forward. There isn't any of that. It's being retrograde for the sake of politics, I suppose, trying to tell people that going backwards is in their best interests. But it's in the best interests of whom? An ever shrinking political minority of voters who are looking to hold on to some version of the past that isn't even historically accurate. That's not something that I can get behind, or any rational Republican or any rational conservative can ever get, but should ever get behind. So as we look to the future of this country, I'm worried, because when you look at France, I mean, the way the right-leaning party in France has gone ultra-nationalist, they don't really stand a chance in winning a national election the way the French voting rules are set up, which means that certain parties, left-leaning parties, are going to win by default. But that's not healthy for an economy, and that's not healthy for a democracy long term. Because when one party doesn't have to worry about winning re-election, they're going to pursue more of their self-interest instead of seeking cooperation, because they don't need to seek cooperation because there's nothing for them to cooperate with. They don't have any, there's no checks and balances by the voters to make sure that they're looking out for the broader self-interest. And ultimately, the people who are going to be the worst off about this are those increasing minority voters in the Republican Party who are going to be more and more disillusioned, more and more angry, but find themselves with even less tangible power because they're endorsing candidates that have less national appeal. So unless they're going to continue to try to hold on to institutional processes like the filibuster in the Senate and the Electoral College to hold on power. And I'm a person who believes in the filibuster and the Electoral College. I would vote, if I were given the decision and the power to vote, I would vote to uphold both of those things. Because I think that those institutional constraints, getting back to my conservative roots, help maintain a long and stable government. Now, that it's not to say that there are times when it feels like conservatives are being complacent and are just being sticks in the mud for no apparent really good reason. But as a general rule, I do believe that those institutional constraints are incredibly important. And yes, there might be times when that works against progress. And that's not to say that I don't believe in progress. I do, but in a way that is stable. Now, that might sound contradictory, and it very well may be, but like Edmund Burke and how we view Edmund Burke, that all is, it's more convoluted than that. And we can all both be liberals and conservatives at the same time, because as I have tried to spend this entire episode showing, is that we have more in common than we have differences, and that we do believe in the same fundamental policies. So as that, you know, liberals and conservatives disagree about a lot, but more often they are allies. I would say that both reject utopian impulses to find government solutions for every wrong. Both resist state planning and high taxes. That gets to the free market part of conservatism and liberalism. Because part of the original liberalism, one of the liberal economic thinkers, Adam Smith, was the father of capitalism. And that is, if you look at The Economist, which is a classically liberal publication, they're very much anti-government intervention in the economy, but you know they consider themselves liberal. So it's like we talked about conservatism. You got to look at conservatism as how traditions are defined in society in the here and now. And liberalism is a set of principles that transcend time and space. At its best, conservatism can be a steady influence. It is reasonable and wise. It values competence. It is not in a hurry. So with that, I would like to say to you guys, thank you so much for listening. Hopefully Jeff or Matt, or I would love to get them both on for one time, can be back next month. But I appreciate you guys sitting through this episode, listening to me talk for a full hour. I'm sure my voice has been lovely for all you all to hear. So, like I said, you can find our backlog on kxrw.fm. And thank you guys all so much for listening. We will see you next month.
Big thank you to Craft Cannabis, formerly known as New Vansterdam, for their ongoing support of KXRW Vancouver Radio. Craft Cannabis is Vancouver's premier cannabis market for those 21 years of age and over. Visit craftcannabis.com to view an order from their full online menu, and they offer in-store, curbside, and touchless pickup to better serve you. Craft Cannabis is located in the Heights Shopping Center on the corner of Mill Plain and Andreessen Road. Open 8 a.m. to 11 p.m., 365 days a year. More information available at craftcannabis.com.
Community radio like this is brought to you by the generous support by our founding sponsors at ADCO Commercial Printing and Graphics, Clark County's local print shop since 1993. ADCO features stationery, posters, flyers, tickets, business cards, stickers, catalogs, and much more. Print on anything and mail anywhere. Learn more at ADCO1.com. That's ADCO, 1.com. KXRW.com.
KXRW programming is made possible by the generous support by David Dansky with David's Toys, buyer and collector of old toy trains, including Lionel, Flyer, Ives, and Marks. He is interested in buying old transportation-related toys as well as toy trains from the late 1800s to the 1960s. David offers appraisals for fellow toy train lovers as well. David's Toys can be reached at 360-576-1602. That's 360-576-1602. Many thanks to our sponsor and friends at Say Chow Columbia River Tap Room and Eatery. Chef Peter has been cooking for over 27 years in the Vancouver area. Say Chow, Greater Vancouver's premier catering company. Conveniently located at 2501 Southeast Columbia Way in Vancouver. Dine in or take out for lunch, Monday through Friday, 11 to 2 p.m. Hours will change and live local music will return once again as COVID phases allow. More information available at say-chow.com, that's say-chiao.com, or directly at 360-210-5522.